Man, what a jam-packed show we have today with Jay Billis and Matt Rhule on it. But Wake Forest remains the big story as they look for their next basketball coach. We're still in the early stages of that search process for Danny's replacement. But I believe there's one coach who fits best giving a criteria that makes sense for Wake Forest. And that coach is Winthrop's Pat Kelsey. Again, based on a criteria I have here for Wake Forest, the three most important things being you got to have some tie to North Carolina or Wake Forest, meaning you understand the neighborhood you will be stepping into. You got to have high energy, man. Danny didn't have that. The next guy needs to breathe life into the program. The same way John Curry, I'd argue, did last year when he stepped in for Ron Wellman. Curry, he drummed up interest for Wake Forest football. I thought he did an excellent job in doing so in the fall. And then, obviously, the next guy needs to have head coaching experience. But at some point down the line, you better have Power 6 coaching experience too. Doesn't have to be a head coaching spot at a P6, but head coach or assistant position. That really matters in my mind. I think Kelsey is the best fit, but let's just do process of elimination given the criteria I just presented. Having ties, it essentially means that you understand resources are not going to be as plentiful as what you might find at Duke or North Carolina or NC State. Geographically, hey, you are a private school. It's going to be more difficult for you to land recruits. You have to be a little bit more resourceful. You have to understand the recruiting base. I think that eliminates Steve Forbes, who was a career assistant before arriving at East Tennessee State. Never spent time coaching in the state of Virginia or in North Carolina or in South Carolina. Spent time in Wichita. He spent time in Big Ten country, in Iowa, spent time in Oklahoma, pretty much everywhere else other than the South or in the Carolinas. So I don't think Forbes is going to be seriously considered. Energy's an interesting one. It usually means youth, but not always. Like, I don't think anybody would say Roy Williams isn't energetic. I don't think anybody would say Coach K isn't energetic. So this isn't an age thing, necessarily. Last year, Mack Brown, he replaced Larry Fedora, and Mack, he's a fun, energetic guy, and you see it paying off on the recruiting trail. Mike Young, I think he's a great hire for Virginia Tech. And even though he's a little bit older than some of the candidates that get hired nowadays, he showed a lot of zest, a lot of showmanship, a lot of personality and energy. So this isn't necessarily an age conversation. I do think it eliminates John Beilein. I don't understand how Wake Forest fans can't get this through their head. Beilein, he isn't a fit. If he was, I think he'd already be hired because he has the same agent as Danny Manning. Same guy who's negotiating Danny's buyout on behalf of Danny would also be the person representing Beilein. So I can't fathom Curry hiring a search firm if Beilein was his goal all along. I think it's been communicated to Wake Forest that Beilein isn't interested, or Wake Forest just isn't interested in John. He's older. He's accustomed to resources. The last 20 years, West Virginia, Michigan, NBA, big public schools, places with a lot of resources. You're not getting that at Wake Forest. His age does play a factor here because you're not stepping into a place you're going to win immediately. By the time you start winning, you're going to be in your early 70s. And he's already done a lot of his best work. I don't think he's going to have greater things happen at Wake than he had at prior stops. Then this is the kicker. Some experience coaching in a Power 6 conference. I think this eliminates a few guys that people like. like a Wes Miller, like a Lavelle Moton. Every modern day Wake Forest coach that's been hired the last 30 years has checked this box. Dave Odom in 89. He was a longtime assistant for Terry Holland at Virginia. Skip Prosser, he was Xavier. Dino, he was Skip's assistant. Bezdelic, a head coach at Colorado. Danny, longtime assistant at Kansas on a national title-winning team, head coach at Tulsa. So I can't see Wake Forest looking at the success that Wes has had at UNC Greensboro with one NCAA tournament appearance and looking at the success that Lavelle Moton's had in the MEAC without any other P6 experience, thinking that that is a safe hire, thinking that that is the right place for Wake Forest to be. So we've gone through a lot of people, just the popular candidates for Wake Forest. We've gone through Steve Forbes, gone through John Beilein, gone through Lavelle Moton, gone through Wes Miller. Who's left among those who are being popularly talked about right now? I think there are three names: Pat Kelsey, Russell Turner, Ryan Odom. Only one of those three coaches have a winning percentage above 60%. That's Kelsey. I think that would be the determining factor between three pretty good candidates. Also, Odom, he had a tough year last year. Usually you're a product, or usually you get opportunity when you're on the wings of success. Odom, if he just this year, if there was an NCAA tournament, had the 16-1 upset, maybe he does jump into a job like Wake Forest. But following that up 2 years later without an NCAA tournament appearance in this past year, fielding a very average 500 team, I don't think's helping anybody. As for Russell Turner, there are logistics that make this difficult. He's at UC Irvine all across the country. 49 years old, so still a pretty young guy. Just hasn't won as much as Kelsey has. So I think Pat Kelsey is the best candidate. He understands Wake Forest history. I think a lot of Wake fans, they still believe the Deacs got it wrong in 2014. They still believe that they should have went harder at Chris Mack, found a way to get him here because of the Skip Prosser legacy. I don't know if Chris would have ever considered seriously coming to Wake, but that's how Deacon fans feel. You can bring in Kelsey, who along with Dino and along with Chris Mack was an assistant for Skip in Winston-Salem, knows what it's like to see the Joel filled up, to see successful Wake teams, has a lot of energy. Just follow the guy on social media and you'll see that, man. Like, chest bumping people, high fives all around, active on social media, on campus, giving students tickets for free. Seems to be a great guy. And I think it would be an easy sell. Geographically, he's in the state of South Carolina. His history with Wake, it just makes too much sense. So I'm saying it right now, in the early stages of this coaching search process, Pat Kelsey, he is my favorite to become the next head coach of the Demon Deacons. However, if you want your voice heard on the subject, 336-777-1600. We're on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. In fact, we have a poll up there as well where I simply ask, hey, who do you want the coach to be? With the options being Wes Miller, Ryan Odom, Pat Kelsey, or other. And right now, 42% of the vote is other, but the leading man, I think, is Wes Miller. I feel like that's the most popular coach on the circuit. He has 38% of that vote, with Ryan Odom getting 11 and Pat Kelsey getting 9.
He really appreciates you listening and thanks you from the bottom of his twisted little heart.
Congratulations, you've won over a complete imbecile.
The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Wes Miller, He's easily the most fascinating candidate for the Wake Forest job. He's the coach most Deacon fans would like to see hired, I think, based on a Twitter poll at Josh Graham Radio at Sports Hub Triad. I don't see that happening at any other power conference school. Also, it should be noted his dad is one of the five biggest donors at Wake Athletics, or for Wake Athletics. I don't know what his interest is in the job. I'd imagine it would be something he's interested in. It seems Wake Forest has him on their short list who they want to consider to be Danny Manning's replacement. I think this is what it comes down to. West does not need Wake in order to get a Power 6 opportunity. But if West has it in his sights, if it's his dream job to end up in Chapel Hill, to be Roy Williams' successor, I think he's going to have to succeed somewhere else other than UNC Greensboro. And I love UNCG. My goodness, watching that program, which was once in shambles, be picked up by somebody around here, somebody we loved watching on a championship Tar Heel team in 2005, it's been a big thrill. But I think if he wants to get the North Carolina job, him being a former Tar Heel, I don't think it's enough for him to make that kind of a leap. Because North Carolina, it's one of the five best basketball jobs in America. Almost anybody anywhere would jump at the opportunity to take that job. I just can't see, under any circumstances, North Carolina, as long as Bubba Cunningham's there, hiring a coach from the SoCon to be the head Tar Heel. I just can't see it. Can you imagine that? Like, nationally speaking, how do you think that plays? Like, when North Carolina makes a coaching change, it is national breaking news. It's all over the place. It doesn't matter what's happening. Heck, they could dump it the same way John Curry dumped the news on Saturday, and it would take over some of the draft coverage if North Carolina made a coaching change off of Roy Williams. That's how big it is. Can you imagine what the national perception is if UNC Greensboro coach Wes Miller is the guy who replaces Roy? It just wouldn't happen. The only circumstance I think Roy would pick his replacement is if it's a promotion on his staff. If he recommends to Bubba, or whoever the AD is at that time, 4 or 5 years from now, heck, maybe even longer than that. I don't want to sell Roy short. And says, I want Steve Robinson to be the guy. I want Hubert Davis to be my successor. Or he just forces the university's hand the way that Dean Smith did and say, it's right before the start of the season, I'm retiring, and I recommended that Bill Guthridge be the guy. I could see Roy doing that. He's been inspired in so many daggum ways by Dean Smith. Why not in that way as well? We are going to be joined by Roy Williams on tomorrow's show, and we're looking forward to that. I don't think Wes has a better option for a step up in opportunity than at Wake Forest. You have the family tie. Now, Robert, this is where I'm interested in your perspective. Do you think Wes, having a father who is one of the five biggest donors at the school, helps his case or hurts his case? Because can you imagine if Wes goes to Wake Forest and for whatever reason, it doesn't work out? He can't rebuild the program that Danny tried to rebuild, that Jeff Bezdelic tried to rebuild. There's no way you go to that same donor and say, hey, any chance you could throw in a couple million dollars to fire your son? Like, that's an awkward spot to be in, right? So does that deter Wake, or is that something that helps Wes Miller if he is, in fact, interested in the job?
I think it kind of breaks a little even because the familiarity, I always have trouble with that word.
You nailed it.
The familiarity of that word is, I just feel like they're going to know him, but also you can't think of things if they go bad. If this goes bad, it's going to be hard to fire him.
Like,
you know?
Every time I go to a press conference with Danny Manning, or excuse me, with Dave Clawson, we're in the Miller Center. You know? So he's not the biggest donor. Like, that's still Ben Sutton, Mitch Shaw, those types. The McCrearys of the world. But he is one of the five biggest ones. He lives in the triad. As I mentioned, I think he would be the most popular choice right now. When I look at social media, aside from the people who think that John Beilein's going to be interested, it's Wes Miller next. He's the guy that everybody's excited for. Now, I take that with a grain of salt, though. I'm not sure if you know this, Robert, but there are a lot of Tar Heel fans around. And they're everywhere. In Winston-Salem, and they're in Greensboro. And they have a pretty big journalism school as well. Is it possible there are people that just love Wes because they kind of root for the Tar Heels? And that's why they're saying that they want Wes to be the next coach. Like, how do true Wake Forest fans feel about this? 336-777-1600 being the phone number. I'd love to hear from you on Twitter at SportsHubTriad. Because aside from Beilein, he would be the most applauded hire. Now, here is where I kind of get bothered by people who overthink this a little bit. I see this argument being thrown out there. You can't hire Wes because at the earliest convenience, if Roy retires, he's going to try and get the Carolina job. To that person, I would simply say, Wake Forest has been not bad, has been awful for the last 10 years. Last 10 years. In order for Wes, in this hypothetical situation, to be considered at North Carolina as Wake Forest coach, Wake Forest will have to win. They would have to be successful in order for that to be sold properly. So to the people saying, oh no, you can't hire Wes because he's going to win too much that he gets hired away from North Carolina, Wake hasn't done any winning at all for the last 10 years. I would just like to hire whoever can help me win right now and for the next few years, right? Like, if he takes the Carolina job, odds are your program's in a better place than it is right now. And it would be seen to be a great hire. It reminds me when I was covering a coaching change at East Carolina. They hired a Duke assistant named Scotty Montgomery a few years ago. And Scotty, he went to Duke. He was an assistant there. People were saying, oh, man, if David Cutcliffe retires in the next few years, we're going to lose Scotty. We can't. This isn't good. I'm like, do some winning first before you worry about that. Because guess what? Scotty didn't do any winning. And he got fired after 3 years. He won 9 games. So to those concerned, Wes might just take the Carolina job after a few years. Hopefully it's after a few years of winning that that happens. It's the most fascinating candidate of the bunch, Wes Miller. We got our trading card, NFL trading card war that we're going to do, which we're excited about. Also, you'll hear from Jay Billis, Matt Rhule, and Zion Williamson next.
Everybody, listen up.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I can't believe this. This is insane.
Me and Robert are going to have an NFL trading card war in about 5 minutes. But we had Jay Billis and Matt Rhule on today's show, and you'll hear from them in a second. However, I learned some things about Zion Williamson last night that I didn't previously know. I can't think of somebody going into the NFL, into the NBA, or any other major sport that has been covered as much as Zion without us knowing a lot of things about him. He doesn't share much of his personal feelings on things. He doesn't really reveal a lot about himself. We just all marvel at his physical abilities and we love his personality. He smiles, he's humble, a great teammate. He veers away from the spotlight, but his play is just hard to deny and also hard to escape watching in some form. But he visited with Ernie Johnson yesterday of TNT, and I thought this might have been the most interesting thing of the lot. He was talking about the injury he sustained against North Carolina. It was in Cameron. Tickets are going at $10,000 a pot. Former President Barack Obama, he's sitting on the baseline. Maverick Carter, he's there. Spike Lee, everybody's there to see Zion. And he gets hurt 30 seconds in. And this is the most vulnerable, this is the most open I've heard him speaking about that event a little over a year ago.
My mom walked in the room, and I think that's when reality set in for me. I broke down because that's the game I dreamed about. You know, Duke-UNC game at Duke. The biggest rivalry in sports, and, you know, I missed out on part one of that, and it hurt. I remember I was in the training room. I told him to turn the TVs off. I couldn't watch it for a few moments. It was hurting me too much inside. And that was my terror moment.
That was his terror moment. And just that image, he's in the back room of crammed Cameron. Everybody came there to see him. He thinks he's all right at first, but then he sees his mom and realizes that this is more serious than he thought. And at first he's watching the game, and then he doesn't want to watch it anymore. Breaking down, this massive human being. Probably the first time he's had to deal with that. Hey, I'm not able to do something I want to do physically, and it's happening at the peak of my interest level, or the interest level in me. That game, it's still the biggest college basketball game I've been around in a long time. Regular season game. Just massive. So I thought that was illuminating. He also shared when his first dunk in-game happened and how it happened.
Well, my first in-game dunk was my first game of my high school career. My teammate threw it up, and I dunked on somebody for my first in-game dunk, and just kind of went from there.
If you were able to dunk, Robert, how often would you be dunking? Like, I've never been able to dunk. I could touch the netting. I'm not sure if that's much of an achievement at all. I never had ups. I was a good soccer player, good runner. Didn't really get high in the sky by any means. There was a movie with Wesley Snipes that I think best explains my physical ability when it comes to leaping. Woody Harrelson was also in that movie. Now, if I could dunk, I'd just like to go into every single gym in America and dunk a basketball. Like, I'd start my day.
Like,
I'd start my day dunking a basketball. Like, the way you guys probably eat breakfast, I would start my day by dunking a basketball. Like, I'd imagine it's the best feeling ever.
You just wake up and stretch your arms up, and there's a basketball goal right there for you.
I would have a basketball goal in every room of my house and make sure it's 10 feet high, and I'd only dunk a basketball.
I've only dunked a basketball one time, and it was with the help of Saints defensive tackle Shy Tuttle. He went to my high school.
No kidding.
And he actually picked me up by my legs and let me dunk the ball. And
that was nice of Shy Tuttle.
It was very nice.
Can we get Shy Tuttle on the show sometime?
Sure. He's not very personable. He's more of a closed setting guy.
Let's try to make that happen.
I'll holler at him.
I'll see if we can do that. Last thing from Zion. Here's a guy who was... That sounded very Mel Kiper-esque. Here's a guy.
I was about to say, where's my bingo board? Let me check that off.
Zion, he was 3 years old, maybe, when MJ retired. But he's watching The Last Doc, as all of us are doing. The Last Dance Doc, excuse me. Everybody's watching it. Jay Billis, Matt Rhule, They're all watching it. We got Roy Williams tomorrow. I know he's watching every bit of this. He's in it. Zion as well, but he wasn't alive to remember anything that Jordan did. So apparently his parents, good parenting here, knew he was interested in basketball and advised him, hey, you need to watch the greatest. So watch Magic, watch Bird, and make sure you watch Michael. And this is what has stood out to Zion about watching Jordan highlights, but also watching The Last Dance as well.
And the one thing he said that really stands out to me is, you know, he plays like somebody's watching him for the first time, and he doesn't want to disappoint. And you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So, you know, for him to have that mindset and to actually play with that mindset throughout his career, you know, just said a lot about him.
It's cool perspective when you consider there's Shaq, there's AI, there's LeBron, there's Anthony Davis, and then there's Zion Williamson. Came into the NBA with just tons of hype, and I'd argue some of those guys didn't have nearly as much hype as Zion did. So I thought that was a pretty cool answer, and I learned more about Zion in a 20-minute interview with Ernie Johnson than I've learned in a year covering Zion at Duke last year. Before we get to our trading card war, let's go to John in Greensboro, who wants in on the Wake Forest basketball search. John, what do you have for me?
Hey there. Really appreciate the show. I love you guys.
Thank you.
Call about Wes or the Wake Forest coaching search. We get lots of good candidates. Personally, being a UNCG grad, big fan of Wes Miller. You know, I just find, you know, I understand you know, some of the other guys, but Wes, man, I think UNCG has been in the KenPom top 100 the last 4 years. Wake's only been there the last two out of the six. Obviously, Wes's connections with the practice facility out there. And, you know, even the fans are worried about Wes going to Carolina. I would say, you know, getting a young guy in there, taking a chance on, even that happening, but just getting the program going in the right direction for the next 4 to 5 years. You know, let's say Roy leaves in 5 years. Just get the program turned around. And then maybe bring in somebody else.
Yeah, and I think it'll be universally applauded. Thank you for the phone call, John. If Wake Forest hired Wes, I really do. You would not find criticism on my part. Now, is he the best candidate? It almost feels like, since there's no competition for Wake on the Power Six front, no other coaching changes have been made, that I feel like I'm comparing, like, Heidi Klum to Megan Fox to Brooklyn Decker here. So when I say I think Pat Kelsey is a better candidate for Wake because of his history with Wake Forest, a couple NCAA tournaments, including one that would have happened this year with Winthrop, I prefer him over Wes. I feel like this is the equivalent to me saying I would prefer Brooklyn Decker over Heidi Klum, which, again, isn't a shot at the beauty of Heidi Klum, just like this isn't a shot to Wes Miller, who we love having on and we've had a good relationship with, saying that Pat Kelsey is probably the best candidate for Wake.
It's like a UFO and a UAP, you know? You can't really distinguish the two.
Thank you for that. Mark in Greensboro, one more on Wake basketball. Then we got our trading card war. Mark, what do you think on Wake and also dunking? I would dunk every single time I'm in a basketball gym if I could dunk. What about you?
Yeah, real quick on Wake, and then I'll tell you a funny story about dunking. I just read it. You can look on Twitter. I forget who it's a well-known journalist just posted that they think that Steve Forbes and Wes Miller are not in the mix as far as the hiring committee. So that you can check that out. I don't verify it yourself, but I just read that on Twitter. My quick story on dunking is I used to be able to dunk in high school all the way up until probably when I graduated college. And then as time and weight started to add to the physique, I wasn't able to get off the ground as much. So I really dedicated myself when I was 30 years old to I'm going to go to a trainer and I have to be able to dunk again. So I dunked and I landed directly on my back. So It was totally worth it, but also felt like absolute crap afterwards for about a week. So, yeah, I mean, dunking's awesome. It's the best thing, honestly, one of the best things that you can do, but got to be careful when you get a little older and you try to relive your glory days.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up. That's good advice. That's Mark in Greensboro. Okay. He's referencing, I think, a Jeff Goodman tweet that we just saw. So this just came across the wire. Jeff Goodman tweets, and he's the one that broke the Danny Manning news. Still no change for me as far as the Wake Forest situation's concerned. Steve Forbes and Wes Miller remain two leaders in the clubhouse, per source. I think that those two have the same agent, too. That's a very important thing to say. I don't think Steve Forbes is really in the running for this. I don't. It doesn't make much sense to me. No connection to North Carolina or to Wake Forest. He is a coach's coach. The same way that Bob McKillop's very respected at Davidson. I get the same kind of vibe with Forbes. Everybody in coaching seems to love Forbes here. But letting you behind the scenes here, Wes Miller, Steve Forbes sharing an agent, it would be, if Jeff Goodman's getting the information from this guy, it would be in the agent's best interest to say, hey, both these guys that are the leader in the clubhouse here, they're both interested. Okay? I think Wes Miller is being strongly considered, and he should. I just don't know about Forbes. Robert, what do you find so funny here?
Just you doing that voice. You're like, Who is that?
Let's get ready for our trading car war. Hey, let's do that.
This means war!
Hey, you're a tough little guy, aren't you?
This means war!
Hey, it's cool!
This means war!
What? Does it have to? Can it mean something else?
Okay, you dirtbags! This means war!
Finish him!
While Josh opens his pack,
I just opened up my pack.
Like a Wolverine.
Yeah. All right. If you don't know how we play this game, we open up a pack of cards each week, and there are 10 players in this pack of cards. Robert hasn't seen his. I haven't seen mine until now. And here are the five categories we need to place players into. This week, it's going to be somebody who owns 3+ pets, most likely to believe in conspiracy theories, somebody who is a putt-putt master, someone who owns a giant fish tank, and most likely to ride a bike as a form of transportation. How are you feeling about your pack so far, Robert?
I think this is the most star-studded pack I have ever had.
Damn. This is going to be tough.
Can you not say the same? Well, I don't know. I'll even the field here if you believe your deck isn't that good.
I'm looking at my field. I'm cool with some things here.
Listen to this crowd, though. The star-studded event that this is. Von Miller,
Don't tell me all your cards.
Oh, I don't care. All right, well, I got Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you wanted that card or not, but I am willing to trade you a Christian McCaffrey for a Lamar
Jackson. Oh, no, I don't need it. I don't think I need it at all.
No, I don't mean, like, for this game. I mean, like, I would like
Lamar Jackson. I got some stars, too. I don't have Lamar Jackson.
Dang it.
We're not trading here.
I want a Lamar Jackson. I guess we're starting off with the 3+ pets, right?
Okay, we're starting with 3+ pets. I do have some significant stars in my pack. And I feel pretty confident that I'm going to win at least two of these. I'm trying to figure out who the putt-putt master is going to be. That's pretty tough.
I have well-known guys, but I don't know where they fit into this puzzle. I guess that's part of the game, but it's gonna be pretty interesting.
Okay.
I'm ready to go.
I'm just gonna go ahead and place a few of these in real quick. I just need, fish tank. What are the traits of somebody who would have a giant fish tank?
Maybe spend, like, not frivolously. Like, spend money on, or have a lot of money to spend on things they don't need. Or like animals, but not want animals that you have to have.
All right. I think I have my five. I'm ready to go.
All right. Where you want to start at? More than three pets?
Let's roll through these. 3+ pets. Who do you got?
I'm throwing Todd Gurley out there.
I'm going to go with his former teammate, Aaron Donald.
See, I feel like Todd Gurley would have pets because growing up in Tarboro, he might not have had the space to have more pets. And I feel like with the big payday, even though he just got cut, he would have a lot of them.
Also, he was in a commercial where he had a cat named Hulu Has Live Sports. So I think you got that one. All right. Second off, believes conspiracy theories. I got Myles Garrett.
See, I went Von Miller. He's a little off the spectrum, you know, with fashion. He likes cowboys. He likes things that he might not certainly like if he was a little off the spectrum.
Well, I think I win this one because Myles Garrett is trying to get us to believe in an actual NFL conspiracy theory that they're not, like, they have the audio that has Mason Rudolph saying a certain word and they don't want it to be out there.
I'll concede that.
Okay. Myles Garrett, police conspiracy theories, the win there. We're tied at one. Putt Master, who do you got?
I'm going Drew Brees. He's got a lot of kids. I feel like what's the cheapest place you can take a lot of kids to play a sport? It ain't the batting cages. It's putt-putt. I feel like he gets a lot of practice.
I'm going equally cheesy. J.J. Watt.
Man, does he have the kids, though? I know...
I don't think he has kids.
I think Drew Brees has four.
Yeah, Drew Brees has the kids, so he's probably better at putt-putt. I'm going to give you that one. Giant fish tank. This was the hardest one for me.
I agree.
I went with Amari Cooper because he just got paid.
Yeah.
And he's a disappearing act. Some would call him a turd. Specifically, Rex Ryan would.
Maybe so, in his aquarium he could have a turd dull, you know? So,
whoa!
Who did that? I'm pulling up Aaron Donald. I have nothing to support this other than the fact that he has a lot of money, so I will concede Amari Cooper.
Thank you. Final one. Rides a bike as a primary form of transportation. Robert, who you got?
I'm going Christian McCaffrey, man. I feel like that guy would ride his bike to work in Charlotte. And wasn't there a story about him still driving his old car? Like, he drove his old car for the longest. I feel like he's not going to get rid of it.
I don't think that was him.
Who was that?
McCaffrey has a very well-to-do family. He has a beautiful girlfriend who is worth a lot of money. I got Russell Wilson.
See, I don't know if he would either. I wanted a I should have
also
picked
a beautiful girlfriend.
I should have picked Davante Adams because the freaking Packers ride the bike
dummy
everywhere.
But it's Russell Wilson versus McCaffrey. You left one in the deck. Who's going to get rides a bike as primary form of transportation? Russell, he's boring. He's vanilla. I mean, what do you do with that?
He drives a Mercedes, though. But I think Christian would live in Charlotte and ride his bicycle to the camp every day. Are we tied 2-2? Does this decide who wins?
All right, we're going to do radio, rock, paper, scissors. Say.
Oh, God.
Say what you're going to pick on three, okay?
All right.
One, two, three, rock. One, two, three,
rock.
Scissors. That's two out of three.
God dang.
One, two, three, rock. One, two, three, paper. One, two, three, scissors.
Rock. Let's go! This is what I'm talking
about. Has anyone ever done that before? Radio, rock, paper, scissors?
I have a second sense. I don't know what it is. Anyway.
What do you got to take it to the house?
We're talking about UFOs. I think you should be more worried about Bigfoot.
Whoa. We take it to the house next.
The less you expect of Josh Graham,
what is wrong with you?
The less you'll be disappointed. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I just realized we didn't have enough time in that last segment to replay some of Matt Rhule and Jay Billis, who were both just awesome today. If you want to listen to those interviews in their entirety, Robert's been busting it in the control room, already has posted both interviews. You can listen to that on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. Be sure to subscribe and listen to those conversations we had with the Panthers head coach and also with Jay Billis on Wake Forest's current basketball situation. We'll certainly continue to visit that topic all throughout the week, but we just landed another big guest for tomorrow, Robert. We have Roy Williams, who's going to be with us.
I could give a about North Carolina right
B-Dot, now. He's going to be in studio as well, but the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, John Swofford, is booked for tomorrow's show, too. You like apples? Let's take it to the house.
Past the 15, past the 10, past the 5 for the drive. We'll take it to the house.
1, 2, 3.
Just when you think that it can't get crazy enough, here comes Jose Canseco. Like, anytime I see his name, I will click the link immediately because I know there is more, it's more likely to be some rambunctious bull hockey than nothing. And I was not disappointed today. Have you seen this story?
I have, and I think this might be the greatest sports story of the day. I can't believe we're waiting until now to tell it.
This is the quote from Jose Canseco. Can Bigfoot or aliens get coronavirus? I need to know because I have had contact with them.
Do you have the Cardi B drop on hand?
Coronavirus!
Yeah. Uh-huh. This is incredible. Continue.
Okay, so he's saying that he has had contact with aliens and stuff. That's not even the biggest part for me.
It isn't.
It came after that when he said, aliens have been trying to teach us how to time travel, but first, we have to change our body composition, which we are not willing to do. We have tried with animals, and it has failed. Look, if we can time travel, I'm willing to change anything about my body. I'll cut an arm off, I'll lose 50 pounds, whatever we've got to do. But I don't think that Jose Canseco is going to be the person that they reach out to for this. I also read in here a little Easter egg. It was almost like this was TMZ, but it's the New York Post. Jose Canseco has also accused Alex Rodriguez of cheating on his...
on J-Lo.
With his ex-wife, Jessica Alba.
That's right.
Literally everyone involved has said this is not true, besides Jose Canseco.
Jose Canseco believes it, though. Gosh.
What if he's right? What if he is like this Nostradamus-esque prophet and we're not listening to him? Would you feel bad or would you be like, eh?
Wait, you don't believe what Jose's saying?
Coronavirus!
Yeah, I believe all of it. That's just great stuff. All right. As I mentioned, the lineup is Swaff, Roy, and B-Dot on tomorrow's show. Our thanks to Matt Rule and Jay Billis on today's program and for you listening as well. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow on a Wednesday Drive.